Hello, I'm Samantha Sear, and this is the Rooted by Nature podcast. I'm an artist and stay-at-home mum, and in this podcast, I'll be talking about how I reconnect with nature and the changing seasons, share recipes and creative ideas. I'll take you along on my journey as I learn about the trees, plants and wildlife around me, and the folklore and magic surrounding them. It's my hope that this uplifting podcast may encourage you to slow down, enjoy the little things, notice the beauty outside your front door, and feel more rooted by nature. It's December, and every shop window is twinkling with fairy lights. Big green wreaths hang on many of the front doors that line my street, bejeweled with baubles, ribbons, and sprigs of holly, and as I pass by, a fleeting glimpse of a Christmas tree illuminated in someone's front window puts a spring in my step and a flutter of excitement in my belly as I face the fact that Christmas Eve is upon us. When I was sat at my desk writing this episode, the world around me looked like a snow globe. The rooftops, streets, gardens and woodlands were wearing a thick coat of white snow, luminous under a grey, moody sky, heavy with clouds. I spent many a marvellous afternoon this month tucked up inside, my hands wrapped around a mug of soup, my living room feeling festive with decorations, and the Christmas tree glowing with fairy lights. Something that I forget every year is that this busy whirlwind of a month is as much about looking after myself as it is about looking after everyone else. I'm sure I'm not alone in feeling full of excitement and anticipation at the beginning of December, and then feeling exhausted and burnt out by New Year's. A podcast that I like to listen to is Beth Kempton's Calm Christmas and a Happy New Year. It's a lovely way to reassess and reprioritise when the Christmas rush starts to feel overwhelming. Prompted by her book of the same name, I sat with my family this year and asked them what their favourite parts of Christmas were and what they didn't like. And I was surprised to realise that I'd be wrong if I predicted their answers. A simple conversation like this refocused what I was doing and why, and a gentle reminder to ask myself what it is I want to be doing and what I think I'm expected to do, because they're two different things. And I realised a lot of those expectations come from me, simply because I'm trying to find the perfect Christmas. But the important thing is to find a way to do more of the good stuff. Another festive favourite is Nigel Slater's Christmas Chronicles, which reads as a diarised recipe book spanning November through to February, interspersed with the history of Christmas traditions. Again, this is a podcast and a book, and I tend to dip in and out of both, but I try to bear in mind that as wonderful as Nigel's Christmas bubble is, there is a certain level of financial stability that supports such festive endeavours. And Christmas on a budget at home can be just as beautiful as one spent touring Christmas markets in Vienna and eating in the best restaurants in Japan. His recommended list of candles total a staggering amount of money, but I found that making my own candle is far more satisfying. The unscented beeswax purifies the air as well as casting a beautiful glow, and the wick crackles like a log fire. I've included the recipe for this later on in the episode if you're interested. Another recipe book I discovered this year is called Christmas at River Cottage. It's full of recipes for festive feasts, edible gifts, homemade decorations, and ways to reduce food waste and plastic usage. I love books like this at Christmas. They get me excited and I start making endless lists of things to make and things to do, but I wanted to read this extract. One important note before I launch into this chapter. I hope what follows will fill you with inspiration, ideas, and confidence. What I emphatically do not want is to increase the pre-Christmas pressure or inflate the expectations you have of yourself. To me, this line struck a chord because every year I fall into the same trap of trying to shape my Christmas around a specific image of how it should look and feel. And it's easy to forget that this image I'm trying to reflect is not real. It only exists in the media around me. It's an amalgamation of the TV adverts, Christmas movies, glossy magazine covers, social media, and even Christmas cards. It's not a conscious decision to absorb the spectacle and sparkle whirling around me, but it seeps in nonetheless. And I think drives me and many of us to overwork, overspend, overindulge, and see too many people in a short space of time. The expectations are unachievably high, and for many of us, the exhaustion takes the fun out of it. The cortisol pumping through our bloodstreams as a result of the stress hinders our immune system, and the winter colds and flu inevitably take hold and throw a spanner in all the festive work. And then when it's all over, adding up the Christmas spending can be a bit of a shock. I'm the kind of person that puts a lot of thought into each gift, and often I make cards and presents, but it's a lot to juggle. There's never enough time, and I lose the enjoyment in the struggle to get it all done in time. One way I try to think about it all, which always makes me feel calmer and just a bit more level-headed, is to reconnect with the landscape outside and the changing season. Remember why and what we're celebrating, and what's more important. It's midwinter. We are hiding from the long cold nights by gathering, sharing warmth and food, and raising each other's spirits. For me, the focus is love and family, friendship and goodwill, kindness and generosity. However, this isn't easy to do in the shops just before Christmas when I'm trying not to get caught up in the last minute panic buying. But I repeat to myself like a mantra, midwinter. We're celebrating midwinter, and it helps to detach me just for a moment from the commercialism and media-enforced expectations of the season, all of which are directed at me by companies hoping I'll purchase a product. I appreciate that not everyone listening to this podcast will celebrate Christmas, but whether you're religious or not, like me, but celebrate regardless, or subscribe to a different faith, or simply feel drawn to commemorating the winter solstice and the turn of the year, I find it a comfort to know that regardless of faith, culture, and nationality, many people in the Northern Hemisphere have always believed there's magic to be found in these cold winter nights. As humans, we have celebrated this time for as far back as our collective memories stretch, and I think there is a beauty and a wisdom in that. Feasting with friends and family, gathering around a fire, telling stories and connecting with nature and higher powers is a common theme across many traditions. And at the heart of it, there is a joy in knowing that the longest nights have passed and we can look forward to spring. The winter solstice fell on December 21st, and on the wheel of the year it sits opposite to the summer solstice. This means that until then, the days are at their shortest and the nights at their longest. But once we tip past the 21st, then the darkness slowly retreats and the days lengthen. And in a matter of months, the warmth of the sun will return to us, along with the wildlife waking from their winter slumber, and the landscape will turn green once more. Standing proud at the back wall of my garden, I have a black lace elder tree. The flowers and the berries have come and gone, the fine frilly black leaves carpet my lawn, and the naked tangle of 100 bare branches now dominate the space. Instead of stringing fairy lights around it, I've opted for bird feeders instead, including giant mushrooms full of peanuts and baubles of brightly coloured fat balls, which, before you give me a funny look, are rounded cages full of nuts and seeds rolled in balls of lard. There are so many creative ideas for do-it-yourself bird feeders online that I'm tempted to go a bit mad with it and see how many I can fit on the tree. Now, this is of course intended to help the birds during the colder months when food is scarce, but I think I benefit most from it. Now, each morning while I wait for my coffee to brew, I stand at my kitchen window and look out at my garden, sparkling with frost in the morning sunlight. And most mornings, I'll see a branch move, a flash of red and a flutter of movement, and there is a robin looking straight at me. That little tilt of the robin's head like an acknowledgement, a polite hello, will lift my spirits every single time. When it comes to my garden, I have to confess I failed to plant my daffodils. The bag of bulbs is still sitting there, hopefully looking at me each time I walk through the door. I may still have a chance with the tulips if I can order some compost in time. There is no hope of digging in the garden now. The ground is frozen solid. I did manage to get my snowdrops and alums into little pots on my garden table, and I'm hoping they won't mind the snow they have been buried under. Although one of them is in pieces, note to self, not all pots are weatherproof. This one crumbled away once the snow melted. If you hadn't guessed by now, I'm a complete novice at gardening. I've never had my own garden up until now, so I have equipped myself with gardening books, a certain level of optimism, and it's very much a learn-as-you-go type of journey. The best kind, I think. I have a wish list this year that I'm still hoping will become a shopping list at my local garden centre for fragrant winter blooms to cheer up my rather sad-looking garden. The tulips, still hypothetical at this point, would be in pots on the patio to bloom in spring, and I'm banking on those little snowdrops to raise my spirits in the long cold days of January and February. The plants on my wish list are witch hazel, winter sweet, and viburnum. There is one more, but I struggle to say this with a straight face, so forgive me, I honestly don't know how else to pronounce this, but it's Succa cocca confusia. Yes, and apparently it smells amazing. Oh, and there is, of course, the Christmas rose, or hellebore, which is its proper name, but I have omitted this one as my toddler has a habit of putting everything into his mouth, including my plants, so I avoid planting anything poisonous. The one thing I would say about my wish list is none of the blooms are particularly impressive, devoid of colour as most wintry blooms are white, and nothing like the show-stopping summer displays of peonies, dahlias and sunflowers. No, these plants are on my list for their fragrance. I've often wondered why winter flowers are known for their delicious scents, but not for their colour. And this made sense when I read recently that it's to attract pollinators. There are so few pollinators out and about this time of year, and not much competition from other plants now past their summer grandeur. So the best way for a plant to attract them is by smell. A scent will carry on the breeze further than a static display of riotous colour. I think giving plants as gifts this time of year is a lovely idea, but they can be quite expensive. I have seen calendars advertised that have seeds embedded in the paper, which is a great idea, but again, can be quite pricey. So I thought, why not take the idea and simplify it for a handmade gift? Buying seeds is cheaper than buying established plants. So if you know a gardener or someone keen to start, then why not give them a little gardener's diary, one that has room for notes and jobs to be done for each month, and attach little packets of seeds to each month corresponding with the time to plant them. You could use a mix of flowers, herbs, and vegetables, and if they don't have a big space, then it could be plants suited to a window box, or even just pots for inside the kitchen. Another nice present which I make using flowers taken from my garden in summer is bath salts. It's more economical to make them than buy them, so why not clear out the fridge, clean out some nice jars and fill them with layers of Epsom salts and dried herbs and flowers, along with a nice spoon and a muslin drawstring bag which they can fill themselves for each bath. The bag, once filled and tied, can be hung over the tap or thrown into the bath. It is a good idea to use the bag. You could just throw the flowers and the herbs into the bath water, but trust me, it takes some time to clean out the plug hole. Not a pleasant job. Combinations that I tend to make are chamomile and rose with a layer of white Epsom salts, rose buds, pink Himalayan rock salt, dried chamomile flowers, and then a few drops of essential oils, and then I repeat the layers. Rose petals can be collected in summer and dried in preparation for this, or bought from the shops. I have found some beautiful and delicious petals in Middle Eastern grocery shops. A great cheat, though, when it comes to buying aromatic herbs, is herbal tea bags. There is such a broad variety now. Chamomile tea bags, for instance, with the whole flowers inside, are perfect for this. Just cut them open. Another combination is salt and lavender with some geranium essential oils mixed in. If salts aren't your thing, then oats are also really good for the bath, as the milky effect it has on the bath water is great for the skin. A bit mucky to clean out of the bag though, as it turns into porridge, so perhaps one to do at home instead of giving as a gift. If you don't have a bathtub, then use these ideas for a foot bath. I forget just how soothing a foot bath is, especially after a cold walk. And although I do feel a bit daft sat on the couch with my bare feet in a washing up bowl, it is deeply satisfying and a great way to warm up if the cold has really got under your skin. Speaking of the cold getting under my skin, I have learned that thermal layers, thick fleecy boot socks, waterproof boots and a flask of coffee really does make all the difference to a winter walk, and I can't recommend thermals enough. Yes, I am late to the game here, and listeners in cold areas will likely be wondering why I am stating the obvious. But this is all very new to me. Before COVID and having a baby, at this time of year, I would not have dreamed of wearing thermals because my commute on the London Underground was hellish enough, thank you very much. Crammed into the morning crush, the windows slick with condensation, everybody wrapped in layers of woolies and the shared body heat bumping up the temperature, thermals would not have been pleasant, which I keep in mind when I am pulling my jeans on over my leggings. I am grateful to be facing a frosty wood than the central line. And this little gratitude exercise really does help me when my toddler is tugging me towards the front door, his intentions made clear regardless of the fact that he is too little to say, let's go for a walk, and my suggestion of a quick run around the garden garners clear disapproval. I totally understand and agree that at this time of year, a morning walk feels less and less inviting. So many reasons not to venture out into the cold, but I am surprised every time by how beautiful the walk turns out to be. Before the snow fell here, everything was iced in hoarfrost, spelt H-O-A-R. It's different to ground frost, and little icicles fan outwards from every edge, the little spikes getting longer and longer with each moment as the ice collects vapour from the air, and every leaf, branch and plant in sight is sparkling in the morning light. His tiny gloved hands are wrapped around two of my fingers as he walks along beside me, enjoying the crunching noises his wellies make on the frozen path. My eyes are on the hedgerows, and I find myself making a mental list of the evergreens that I'd like to find and bring home. Holly, ivy, pine, fir, cedar, and I am on the hunt for mistletoe. People have been bringing evergreens into the home for as long as we can remember. In the UK, we only tend to do so at Christmas, and the first that pops to mind being some kind of conifer tree. Most of us think of Prince Albert here, but there is a written record taking the tradition back to the 1600s. Holly, with its scarlet red berries, is a favourite, and ivy, of course, which brings the carol to mind. But if you're bringing it into the home, it's good to know that if you bring in holly first, then a man, supposedly, will head the household. But if ivy precedes holly, then a woman rules the roost. This tradition is rather biased when paired with the saying that it's bad luck to bring ivy in before Christmas Eve. I suppose it makes sense, though, to decorate with evergreens when you consider that it's abundant outside, it's free, and it's beautiful by comparison with the otherwise barren landscape. And so perhaps it's not that surprising that evergreens carry with them associations of health, protection, and fertility. Something to bear in mind if your decorations are looking a little tired and you'd like a more economical and environmentally friendly equivalent to shopping for tinsel, plastic leaf garlands and tree decorations in your local supermarket or garden centre. Some gold tip pine cones, glittered acorns, slices of dried orange and apple, or whole oranges punctured with neat lines of cloves. Cinnamon sticks, star anise, they all smell fragrant, and with a little string and effort make beautiful additions to each year's decorations, and they double as gifts too. Pinterest is a goldmine of ideas for this sort of thing, and a quick scroll through the pictures is guaranteed to get me in the crafting mood. A Christmas wreath for the front door is something I look forward to every year. In fact, my front door is rarely without one, as I like to change it for each season. A delicate floral band in spring, a bright, bold burst of colour and ribbons in summer, dried leaves and acorns in the autumn, and evergreens in winter. Having spent so many years living in an apartment building without an externally facing front door, I swore that once I lived in a house, I'd decorate my front door every chance I got. But I was rather surprised by the prices of Christmas wreaths once I started looking for them. So for the last couple of years, I have shopped around and bought the cheapest one I can find, bring it home and dress it up. I can make a £10 wreath look like an expensive one with about 10 minutes of effort. You'd be amazed at the difference a few orange slices, glittered pine cones, cinnamon sticks, mini baubles, and a nice big ribbon can make. And there's the satisfaction of knowing it didn't take a bite out of my festive food budget. After Christmas, I strip everything I can from the wreath, along with any nice little bits of ribbon or sparkles that have come in from wrap presents, and I put it all in a bag labelled wreath and throw it in with the other decorations to be put away for next year. One year, I hope to make my own from scratch. I know, it's ambitious. Weaving dried willow twigs into a circle and entwining evergreens around it. There is a willow tree near me that I have in mind. However, I have accepted that there is only so much I can do with a teething toddler under my feet. So for now, those crafting days are yet to come. It's worth bearing in mind here, if you have children and pets, and there are curious little hands and paws pulling at Christmas decorations, that some of the real ones are poisonous. Mistletoe and holly berries are toxic, so if you think there's a chance that these delicious looking berries could be pilfered, then perhaps going down the artificial route isn't so bad. On our walks, there is so much still to notice, and making a conscious effort to take note of what's around me is a quick and simple form of mindful meditation. Although most of what I can see is coated in frost, there are still pops of red berries glittering in the bushes, which will help feed the birds. Rose hips are a big draw for hungry birds, and the benefit of bare branches naked without their leaves is that little birds are so much easier to spot. The slightest shake or dip of a branch is a clue for where to look. My favourite is the robin, with its bright red breast so easy to see, especially when everything around me is so white. It will always lift my spirits. I think Christmas cards are probably the reason why we associate Christmas with robins, but it could also be that we start to really notice them around now, because there's not so many other colours fighting for our attention, and they're such confident little things, especially now because they're mating in December, so both male and females are out and about, the males are bright and bold and happy to make an appearance, and singing their little hearts out to impress the females. And once pregnant, these little ladies will go quiet as they begin thinking about nesting and laying their eggs. Other birds I'm on the lookout for this month include the woodcock, easy to distinguish by its long, narrow beak. And the tufted duck, wax wings, a beautiful bird about the size of a starling with a tufty plumage on top of its head. These birds visit us from Scandinavia, and I'm hoping that if I aim for the bushes that I know are still bejeweled with bright berries, I might see one. Field fares and red wings both have spotty breasts, but the latter has a red armpit, hence the name. A grey warbler with black feathers on its head that looks like a bad toupee is called a black cap, and if you see one, it's likely to have come from Europe, as our British black caps head off to Africa for their winter holiday. Another warbler with rather nondescript plumage is a sort of yellowish brown, and it's on my list purely for its name, the chiff-chaff. I just want to be able to say to my little boy, look, a chiff-chaff. Another bird with a great name is the long-tailed tit, but I prefer the old folk name of flying teaspoon. How sweet is that? It's because of its shape. It's tiny with a very rounded body and a long tail. So in flight, it looks rather like a bobbing spoon. I'm also likely to spot a sparrowhawk here in the woods, recognisable by its size and curved beak, a giveaway sign that it's a predator. Speaking of which, the tawny owl will be marking its territory this month, and I'd love to see one, but I'm not sure I'm brave enough to walk through the woods at night. But a tidbit of information, the female says to wit, and the male says to woo. With my mind full of berries and birds, I've blown the mental cobwebs away. Our cheeks are pink and our noses could rival that of Rudolph's. So it's time to head for home, and my little one is happily enticed back with the promise of hot chocolate to warm up. Snuggling on the sofa under a blanket watching a Pixar movie is a marvellous optional extra. A nice thing I've started to do on our return home is to put the oven on low and pop in some sliced oranges lined up on a baking tray and left for a few hours to dry out. It warms the kitchen, has a lovely smell, and means I can squeeze in making some decorations during my son's afternoon nap. They look lovely hung at the windows like little golden suns, and with a slip of ribbon through each one, it's a doddle. The widest part in the middle of the orange is obviously the best bit, but don't throw out the ends. Use these dried as potpourri, along with cinnamon sticks, star anise and pine cones, all of which I happen to have to hand when I'm crafting decorations. Another simple and satisfying task I like to do, but I leave until my toddler is safely out of the way, is making a beeswax candle. I usually use cotton wicks, but I have just discovered wooden wicks that crackle like a log fire when burnt. They're easy to find, cheap to buy, and arrived on my doorstep just in time to make some candles for Christmas. I love to use beeswax because it purifies the air, it's a beautiful honey colour and easy to melt in pellet form, but you can easily switch this with soy wax for a vegan option. Making a candle is incredibly simple. Choose a heatproof container. I like using the wide squat glass jars that my supermarket bought coconut oil comes in. If you're using jam jars, opt for one that's wide enough so that you can easily reach the wick to light it, especially once it's burned halfway down. Once you have a clean, dry jar, use a spot of glue or sticky tape to attach the little metal bottom that the wick sits in to the bottom of the jar. If you're using the wooden wick like me, just cut it to size first and it will stand upright while you pour in the wax. If you're using a cotton wick, wrap it around a pencil and lay the pencil across the top of the jar so that the wick can stay up and straight. Put enough wax aside and choose what you're going to melt it in. I say this because you don't want to use something that you use for other things, because once it's coated in wax, it is easier to keep this as a designated wax bowl than trying to clean the wax off. When I first made this candle, I made the mistake of using a wide glass bowl, and then when I poured the wax into the candle jar, most of it went in, but the rest poured all over my kitchen countertop, the cupboards and the floor. For the rest of the week, the new game to play with my toddler is who could scrape off the most wax with their fingernails. So a word to the wise, use something that's heatproof and easy to pour from, like a jug, a beaker, a tin or a tool jar. Once you have your soon-to-be wax-coated container, fill it with the wax pellets and pop it into a saucepan of simmering water and wait until the wax melts. Once it's liquid, pour it into your candle jar and wait for it to set. It's worth melting more wax than you think you'll need, as the wax starts to shrink a bit as it sets, leaving more of a gap at the top than you'd expect. And if you're using pure beeswax and you have a little left over, then it is the perfect time to make a batch of honey lip balm flavoured with vanilla and coconut. I came to make this because I couldn't find my favourite lip balm in the shops, and in this weather, going without was not an option. Where did all my lip balm go, you may wonder? Have I really used that much up? No, my toddler likes to find them in my bags, pockets, or take it straight off my bedside table and then hide them. And the one I did find was down the toilet. So instead of trying a new brand, I thought I'd just make my own. It's a lot easier and it's cheaper. So if you'd like to watch a video for making lip balm, there's a YouTuber called Annabelle Margaret, and on her Green Witch channel, she makes an orange and mint lip salve. If you fancy an instant hit of calm and cozy, then I recommend her videos because they are just stunning to watch. You could just as easily make this a herbal lip balm if you have time to infuse the oil with the herbs. But for me, it was a spur of the moment, quick, he's asleep kind of thing. So instead, I raided my baking cupboard and I used flavourings instead. It's a great cheat. You know that what you're using is safe, edible, and it tastes great. You can use any flavourless oil like olive oil or sunflower oil, but I used extra virgin olive oil. Not because I'm fancy, but because I was saving my normal oils for all the Christmas roasting I had to do, and actually it gave the balm a lovely colour and a herbal note to the flavour, so I recommend it. But this recipe is quick, simple and inexpensive, so if you'd like to give it a go, here is the recipe. Melt 14 grams of beeswax with a tablespoon of coconut oil and 2 teaspoons of honey. Stir in 100 ml of olive oil, a teaspoon of vanilla extract and a teaspoon of coconut extract. Then pour into suitable containers. I happen to have a couple of those teeny tiny little jam jars in my cupboard, but empty lip balm pots are easy to find and buy online. Once I'd filled up my teeny tiny little pots, I poured my excess lip balm into a jam jar, screwed on the lid, and set it aside for another day. This will be easy to melt down again and top up my little pots when they run low. For me, like so many others, Christmas has had its ups and its downs. I never let go of the festive spirit, and my inner child is stubbornly holding on to that magic, which will patiently wait as I fret over to-do lists and worry about plans and how we will fit it all in. And that magic will just pop out and surprise me in moments of quiet, like hearing a robin singing in my garden, the sight of a holly bush studded with red berries, or the sudden scent on the breeze of spices and wood smoke, reminiscent of Christmases from long ago. Christmas can catch me out. A pang of grief when the frenzy subsides and I miss those who won't be at the table this year. Or a moment of joy when my son sees his first present. A kiss under the mistletoe. Or the sudden rush when I see a tree lit with 100 lights. Christmas seems to me a time of exceptional highs and lows. It's a unique moment in the year that just intensifies whatever it is that we're feeling, the good and the bad. It can be a conflicting tangle of guilt for the abundance we have compared to those in need, the financial stress that abundance can bring, love and joy, loneliness and loss, expectations and disappointment, magic and melancholy, frenetic energy and stillness, the desire for company and the need for time alone, the partying and the recuperation. It can be fun, it can be painful, it can be anticlimactic, and it can be simply magical. The conclusion that I've come to is that Christmas is a roller coaster ride, but most importantly, it's what you make it. I'll end this episode here with my favourite Christmas poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas by Clement Clarke Moore, which since I was little has never failed to put me in a festive mood. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap, when out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a lustre of midday to objects below, when what to my wandering eyes did appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop, the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof, the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry, his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, as the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know that I had nothing to dread. he spoke not a word and went straight to his work and filled all the stockings and then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim before he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all and to all a good night." Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again in January for the next episode of Rooted by Nature.